sequencing. Why police have to travel to the courthouse to make the arraignments. And, you know, there are a thousand ways in which we can get more police on the street without actually having new recruits.
Even the Strap Hangers campaign, a group that monitors the subways, expressed patience with the move, which will also delay the training of 270 new transit officers. Joe Rappaport is a spokesperson for the group.
Well, the mayor has given himself 4 years to get an officer on every train at night. This isn't a good start. It is a short delay, we hope. If the class doesn't get going in 6 weeks or soon after, I think it would make sense to be very concerned, and we would be extremely concerned about a delay of that nature.
And finally, Thomas Repetto, president of the Citizens Crime Commission, says he thinks Dinkins will soon change his mind.
I understand why the mayor has to be prudent at the beginning of his administration and make sure how much money is available, but I'm sure that after he reviews the situation with his new police commissioner, Lee Brown, he will decide that this police class is needed and probably even more police strength.
For WBAI, this is Sam Green reporting.
And finally tonight, for the first time in Connecticut history, the State Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities has issued a ruling against a real estate agency for racial steering. The ruling was issued in the case of Cynthia Watts, a black woman who took part in a law school project which targeted four real estate agencies to determine if they were illegally directing African Americans to certain neighborhoods and whites to others. Richard Vecchio has more.
Cynthia Watts was a first-year law student at the University of Connecticut School of Law when she first walked through the doors of Plaza Realty in Hartford.
What the class decided to do was just randomly select real estate companies in the Hartford area, in particular on Farmington Avenue in Hartford, and just send out testers to see whether they would find any evidence of discrimination. And I participated in a tester as a tester in that program, and as a result of the testing, after being compared with another white tester of a similar background, similar appearance, and similar preference, we found that we were given completely different apartment listings.
Watts filed a complaint with the Connecticut State Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities.
Initially, the complaint was dismissed by them without an investigation, and at that time I had a pro bono attorney who successfully argued that the commission should reconsider their case, in which in fact they did. And it was investigated and certified to go to hearing.
Cynthia, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
This is the first ruling in a case like this. Do you think that the commission has done its job up until now?
Well, I think the commission has been plagued with a number of problems, and I think we're going to see some changes in the commission, in part due to changes in their enabling legislation that are going to require them to do more thorough investigations earlier on, and if they find reason of probable cause, they have to do a hearing within 90 days. So I think that there's going to be a lot of changes.
Do you think that your training as a lawyer is what helps get this case put through?
Yes, I do. I think had I not been a law student at the time, it probably would not have been pushed along and pursued to this degree, in part because I was able to get a pro bono attorney who picked up the ball for me while I was in law school. And many people, as you know, that really would be pursuing these type of claims don't have the resources to retain a lawyer. So often those cases are another reason why they get pushed in the back burner. So it takes a lawyer to take an aggressive stance and make sure things are getting pushed along. And again, because my case was initially dismissed, I think someone who didn't have a lawyer would have just settled at that stage and not really realized the recourse that one would have.
The Assistant to the Attorney General of Connecticut, Tom Garapi, says the people of Connecticut are encouraged to file complaints with the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities when they feel they've been discriminated against. But he's not unaware of the fact that this is the first time in Connecticut's history that a racial steering case has been ruled on.
The difficulty is that steering is a fairly sophisticated and fairly subtle form of discrimination. In order to prove steering, you have to have two people involved, other than the people who've allegedly committed the offense. You have to have someone who is a member of the affected group, a minority, for example, and you have to have someone else. It's not the sort of thing where if you go out to rent an apartment and you're subject to that, you necessarily know. In fact, Cynthia Watts said today during our news conference that by herself when she walked out of that that real estate office with a list of apartments and addresses in her hand, she was not at that point even aware that this was steering, because she was not familiar with the housing market in Hartford. She was a new law student in town, didn't know neighborhoods, the streets didn't mean anything to her, and had no suspicion at all that the white woman who had been to that office just a short time previous had completely different addresses.
Having been found guilty of steering, Plaza Realty must pay Cynthia Watts $1,500. They'll also have to provide information to the Connecticut Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities to prove they are not continuing the racist practice. They have 30 days to decide if they want to appeal the ruling. If they do, the case will go to civil court. Plaza Realty could not be reached for comment. Meanwhile, the commission, along with the Department of Consumer Protection, is completing a study to determine how widespread racial steering is in Connecticut. For WBAI News, this is Richard Vecchio reporting.
And that's some of the news for Thursday, January 4th, 1989. The news was engineered by Jennifer Burnett. It was produced with Evelyn Tully Costa, Sam Green, Tari Karam, Sasha Niari, Nadine Michelle Shaw, Ricky Vecchio, and David Sears. I'm Amy Goodman in New York with Tara Seiler in Washington for WBAI Listener Supported News. And special thanks to Undercurrents producers Dennis Bernstein and Laura Flanders.
Hey, was that thunder? It was thunder. Well, good evening to everybody out there. It's not really thunder, at least not yet, but it might be soon. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. It's not Citizen Kafka. Citizen Kafka has moved. For those of you who have tuned in wanting to hear him, he can now be heard Tuesday mornings from, I believe, 6 to 9:30. Or thereabouts, definitely in there somewhere, 6 to 9:30. My name's Emmanuel Goldstein, as I just said, and I will be here on Thursday nights for the indefinite future, I'm told, until 1 o'clock, 11:45 until 1, alternating with Andrew Phillips. However, for the next couple of weeks at least, I'll be filling in for Andrew Phillips, so it's just going to be me here at this time slot. And I have a semi-name for this program. I'm calling it the Fifth Corner. Why in God's name would I call a program the Fifth Corner? Well, if you take a look at the way things shape up sometimes at this radio station, the way things are in life sometimes, there's always another side to everything, another dimension. We're taught that there's four corners to the world, but somehow you get the feeling that maybe there's something more. And I don't mean to get into all this spiritual kind of stuff, because that's not what it's all about. But the Fifth Corner sort of implies something magical, something different, something that you wouldn't ordinarily think of. And that's what we're going to try to do here during the all-too-brief time we have. I never realized before how short an hour and 15 minutes is. And this is kind of a warning to those of you listening now, because in about an hour and 12 minutes, you will probably hear me complaining bitterly about how the time has gone by so quickly, and how there's just not enough time to do all the things that there are to do on the radio. And boy, folks, there are a lot of things to do. We're going to try to do some of them tonight as sort of an intro to all the potential that's out there. They include things like listening to a special greeting from Moscow, which I just received. We'll also have a special guest drop in for a brief moment. And we'll talk about all kinds of other neat things, too, as well as hear a bit of music. But, boy, an hour and 15 minutes, I don't know how much we can do in that time. Anyway, we'll give it a shot. This, by the way, is Jean-Michel Jarre off the Equinox album, one of my all-time favorites, which is why it kind of bothers me that I'm talking over it, so enough of that. We'll be right back. you believe 1990 is here? I'm sorry, Jean-Michel. I can't bear not talking on the radio sometimes. I'll keep him right about there. Yeah, I think that'll do for now, as long as he doesn't do anything outrageous. Yeah, 1990, folks. 1990 is here. I mean, it's for those of us who have trouble dealing with just, you know, the everyday things, you know, like the sun rising and all that kind of thing. It's 1990. Wow, 10 years away from 2000. And what does that mean, you know? A lot of questions have to be answered by 2000. For instance, what do we call those 10 years between 2000 and 2010? Now, you can't call them the hundreds, because that's sort of the whole century is the hundreds. What are you going to call them, the zeros? You know, it's kind of a bad way to talk about the time in which you live. What are you going to say, I was born in the zeros? This doesn't sound very good. The teens, yeah, the 20s, we go through all that again, but I'm still at a loss as to just what that means. And by the way, a lot of people have been quibbling about this, and I don't mean to extend upon it, but why not? 1990 does not actually begin the 1990s. 1991 does, because when we started counting years, however long ago that was, we started with the year one, not the year zero. So this is actually the last year of the 1980s decade. You have to wonder what's going to happen in 10 years. I mean, you know, the 2000th birthday of Christ, that's cause for something huge, I don't doubt. I'll have to see what's on the agenda. But anyway, 1990 is here, and it hasn't hit me yet. I mean, I'm still writing 89 whenever I write something out. I'm sure just about everybody else is, too. It still feels like the 80s. But the 80s have had kind of a weird transition in them. I was talking to somebody about this the other day, about when the 60s actually ended. We figured the 60s ended at about 1973, and then the 70s took over, and the 70s went until about 1986, I think. Now, I consider the 70s to be a very bland, dull period where not much happened and nobody really cared. Well, the fact remains that not very many people still care, but there are exciting things happening. You know, there's something happening on the sunrise, on the horizon. The sun is rising on the horizon, or something like that. I don't know. There are changes. There is weirdness going on. And I've had the feeling that the 1990s, although I said this at the beginning of every decade that I've been around for, I just have the feeling this one is going to be a really momentous one. Only because we've gotten so used to momentous things over the last couple of years. I mean, you know, look at Eastern Europe, look what's going on over there. All over the world. I mean, not just Eastern Europe, but the potential is here. We've learned a lot. We've been through hell, and we're still going through hell in many ways. Hopefully, WBAI will be a major part of the 1990s. I know it's changed things for me ever since I started listening to this radio station, and since I became involved with it, it's opened me up to so much, you know, so many different cultures and ways of looking at things, and I hope it has the same effect on the listeners. Well, I don't know what most folks were doing over the holiday period, but I actually did something different this year. I went down to Florida, of all places. I've never been to Florida in my life. And the only reason I decided to go down to Florida was because I had this free trip I had to cash in on a few years ago. A few years ago, believe it or not. There was this airline promotion where if you took an airline, I won't say the name of the airline. I should say the name of the airline, but I won't. I took this airline down to Washington, D.C. with a friend of mine. And the deal was, because they had just taken over some other airline or something like that. That ought to give you a good hint anyway. Since they had just done that, they were very happy about it, and they were giving out these little scratch cards. And they said, okay, we're going to give you a scratch card, and you're going to scratch off the one of the little panels, and it'll tell you where you've won a free trip to. And I said, great, you know, I'll take an unsuspecting friend along, pay for their ticket, and then I'll have two tickets to some strange place. Well, one of the places was Florida, West Palm Beach. The only thing was, I did this back in, I think, 1986 sometime, And the date that it was good for was late 1989, so I guess they figured most people would forget about it by then. I didn't, however, and I called up the airline and asked for directions on what to do and all that kind of thing. And they, of course, gave me the complete wrong directions, and it turned out that I had to, at the last minute, make a change and go about a week earlier. So this airline is about the only one I can think of where you get a free trip and feel ripped off. And it doesn't end there either. You know, I went to the airport to actually take the trip, you know, to get on the plane and go. And when I got there, they treated me like I was a standby, you know, like I didn't have a ticket. And they were treating all the people like that. Well, not all the people, but the people who were showing up, they were saying, well, we don't have a ticket for you. I mean, we don't have a seat for you, and we don't have any prospects of seats on any future flights. We're sorry. That's just the way it is. You know, most airlines are very, you know, very apologetic when that happens, and they give you free trips to all kinds of other places. But they weren't like that at all. They were treating everybody like it was their fault, even though people had made reservations, you know, in one case a year in advance. So anyway, it looked like I wasn't going to be able to even make it down there after going through all this, and I was really getting upset. I mean, you know, free trips are supposed to be fun, not an ordeal. So finally, 10 minutes after the plane was supposed to have taken off, they asked if anybody was traveling by themselves, and I looked around, didn't see anybody with me, and I said, hey, I'm by myself. And they said, okay, sir, come with us, and they took me to the airplane, and they deposited me in first class. Never been in first class in my life, and probably never will be again. For the life of me, I can't understand why people travel in first class on airplanes. I mean, this is what happened, okay? I walked into the airplane, they said, hello, sir, may I take your coat, sir? Okay, two sirs, great. They took my coat, hung it up someplace, wonderful. Sat down in front of me, a rumpled copy of yesterday's USA Today. Great, you know, that's a free newspaper. Wonderful. Sat down, read the newspaper. Plane took off, we're up in the sky, all that kind of thing. Came by, asked me if I wanted a Pepsi, you know. It's like, wow, you mean the people back there, all those peons, they don't get Pepsis before their meal, but I can get a Pepsi. Wow. It was simply incredible. So I got a Pepsi, and then they brought out the meal, whatever it was. I guess it was lunch or something. And instead of being on those old plastic, you know, plastic utensils and plastic cups and everything like that, it was, you know, a real dish and a real glass, you know, with a little sort of like champagne look to it. And it was nice, but, you know, I still had to give it back afterwards, so that wasn't much fun. And, folks, that was it. That's first class. You know, it's not worth an extra several hundred dollars just for that. I mean, I really... They say there's a little bit extra leg room, but I didn't really notice it. So that's something I learned over the last couple of weeks. Anyway, I like to talk about Florida a bit, because, you know, I learned a couple of things down there that I've sort of brought back with me here to New York. One thing is, well, when I got there, it was extremely cold. It was, I believe, 32 degrees, which is unusual for them. But one thing I learned was the amazing diversity of culture, particularly the Latin American culture that prevails down there. And it's different from up here, because down there it's so dominant. It's everywhere. And for instance, New York City only has one Spanish FM radio station, just one. And in Miami, there must be about five or six. And they're all different. They don't all sound the same. They're all, you know, one caters to Cubans, one caters to Venezuelans. There's a difference between them all. And it's incredible when you open yourself up to that kind of an experience, and you listen to the radio stations, and you hang out with the people, and you just sort of get involved in the way people live. It's the most incredible thing. Almost everyone down there knows some Spanish anyway. It's essential, you know. How can you get through life when you can't communicate with a lot of people around you? Of course, we hear a lot of things. We hear about how, you know, Miami is the drug capital of the country, and how there's all kinds of racial tensions. And both of those may be true, but in everyday life, there's so much more that you don't see in the newspapers, on television. And that's the really important stuff, those little day-to-day contacts, the things that you can pick up just by walking down the street. And that's the stuff you can only get as an individual. So one thing that I got out of going down to Miami over the holidays was a desire to know more, to learn more about the culture, to visit these cultures and be with the people. Yeah, I hung out with a bunch of Nicaraguans this Christmas. Actually, they were a friend of mine said to me, "These Nicaraguans are really conservative. So whatever you do, don't talk about politics. Don't talk about religion. Don't talk about Sandinistas. Don't talk about Nicaragua. You know, talk about the weather. Yeah, you know, it's 32 degrees outside, so that's plenty to talk about. It should last all night long." And it got me all nervous. These wicked conservative Nicaraguans. They were, you know, as soon as I said one thing wrong, I was going to be, you know, called a communist. And I was really worried and nervous. And so I got all dressed up for this thing, you know, because you have to get all dressed up for these formal occasions. This was a Christmas Eve celebration, and I arrived at the house and walked in the door. I guess I was visibly sweating, shaking like a leaf, and first person I see walks up to me, introduces himself, shakes my hand, says, "So, what do you think of Gorbachev?" And, you know, it's not the kind of thing you can fudge your way through. I told him what I thought of Gorbachev. I said, "The man is a historical figure. He's making lots of changes. He's doing a lot of good." And words to that effect. And I got into this rousing discussion with a lot of people there. There was no animosity. We were obviously from different sides of the fence, but we were able to communicate. We were able to talk back and forth. And I think the problem stems from when you're afraid to do that. When you say, "Oh, these people won't understand. They'll attack you if you say something different." Well, they didn't attack. We had lots of fun in our various languages. And I'm sure I didn't convince anyone of my side. I know they didn't convince me of their side, but we were able to mix a little bit. And that's really all that matters. Because if you can't reach people, if you can't communicate with them, what's the point? You know, what's the point of even trying to communicate if you're afraid to even bring something up? So I think that's what we need to do in the 1990s and every year. Don't be afraid to be in disagreement with somebody. Don't be afraid to argue about something or to ask a question or to learn, to appear ignorant. You know, this is so much to get out of all these situations. And I got a lot out of hanging out with people that I would not ordinarily hang out with. You know, if we pulled into our little shells and never venture out and just sort of hang out with the people that we agree with all the time, well, we're never going to reach anybody outside that little shell, and we're also going to kid ourselves about the rest of the world and what it's all about. Boy, I wonder if I could be a preacher, you know? I feel like I'm leading a sermon here. I didn't mean to do that. But anyway, that's part of what Miami was like. Neat place, you know. I if you go down to Miami Beach or Miami or really any place, don't be a tourist. You know, I try never to be a tourist wherever I am. I try to get involved with the things that are going on, to hang out with the real people there, and not, you know, get taken in with all these touristy things. You know, buses and sightseeing and all that kind of thing. The best sightseeing you can possibly engage in is the kind you do on your own two feet. And I'll tell you a little more about what I did on my own two feet, perhaps a little bit later. But, you know, one thing I think is the most important of all the things we can experience, that's music. You know, if you just turn on the radio and flip through the dial and go to all the different stations, stations like BAI and all kinds of other things that are out there, you'll come across different sounds, you know, and new ideas. And that's what I did in Miami. It's what I do in New York. And I heard all kinds of neat music, you know, Spanish music and Nicaraguan, even some Panamanian music. I'll get into that perhaps a little bit later. And soca. I love soca music from Trinidad and Tobago. This kind of music is all over the dial in Miami and should be all over the dial here, too. This is a guy called Crazy. The song's called Carolyn. And this is WBAI New York, Emmanuel Goldstein here.
Carolyn, have you been with your man in the party last night? Oh. You want to go, but you want to stay. Hold your hand and shout out. Let me in.
time to time we have special guests drop in. Today we have Mr. Roger.
Yes, that's all right.
And you're here to discuss certain inequities in the American justice system as discrimination towards people of your caliber.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mr.
That's...
Oh, it's...
Yes.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I guess many of our listeners are wondering how a man like you got a name like yours.
Well, I figured you'd probably ask me that question, like nearly everybody I run into tends to ask me that question. I guess it's just because they don't know of people with names like mine, but I'd like to assure the people that we do exist.
Do you?
Yes.
Well, where did you come from?
Okay, well, my family is of Monrovian descent. The family tree has been traced all the way back to Pierre and Edna.
Ooh.
And that was back in the medieval days.
Mm-hmm. I see. And are there many of the family left today?
Well, it's nothing like it used to be, but in the metropolitan area alone, I believe there are still three members of their clan. That would be if I have my figures. Let me just check here. Yes, Joshua of Long Beach, Tony from Floral Park, and there's one more I don't have here. She lives in Canarsie. Let me just think a second. Oh, yes, that's Cecilia.
Oh, Gesundheit.
Excuse me?
Didn't you just cough?
Oh, no, that's her name, you see. She got married, and she wanted to keep her maiden name, so she combined the two, you see. No, you're thinking of a family in Columbus, Ohio. We have nothing to do with them.
Oh, so you're not related?
No, not at all.
But you're familiar with them, though.
Yes, well, we do try to keep track of one another.
Let me get right to the point of this whole thing. According to the information I have here, you asked to be a guest on this program so that you could speak out against the injustices which a family such as the family must cope with from day to day.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, and before we go any further, could you just explain to us what those injustices might be?
Oh, I'd be glad to. For one thing, the state of New York will not give a driver's license to either myself or my wife.
Mrs. What's her first name?
Our first name is Judith.
Judith?
Yes.
Okay.
The clerk at the office said that our last name was, and this is a quote, ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah, and in addition...
I wonder what her name was.
In addition, I can't get a library card. My kids are unable to register for school, and I can't even get a listing in the telephone book.
I see.
And we've just about had it up to here.
Oh, well, of course I realize what a terrible inconvenience this must be towards people like you. But at the same time, I can see how a name like yours kind of goes against the grain of society. It sounds like you're plotting to overthrow the government or something. How exactly do you plan
Let me assure you, Mike, that people with names such as are among the most conservative people in the country.
Really?
I voted for Ronald Reagan. My wife did, too. My kids carry flags on their briefcases, except they don't go to school because the schools won't let them.
Yeah, but you're planning on changing things here. Well, being liberal in the
well,
fact
it's time
that
to Mike,
get yourself
it's a time for
accepted
a change.
In society.
Yeah, it's time for a change because we have been literally hiding under rocks for the past 200 since this nation has been founded, we have been hiding.
You mean there have been since then?
We've existed since the barbarian age, before then even. Since the time of Christ, I believe, we've been around.
Well, how
all
are you,
over the place.
How are you just going to go about getting things changed?
Well, lobbying, I feel, is the most effective way. And it's really, I think, the only way, especially in a country such as ours. Now, what I've done is I've organized a nationwide coalition of families with central offices in Washington, D.C., and we have quite a list. I could go on for hours listing the families. it's really staggering.
I see.
A lot of common names, which most people probably wouldn't even think of as common.
Like,
are, yes.
In fact, my neighbor's name is...
Oh, then you do know people.
A few. He's rather reclusive, though.
Lots of times some of us tend to be like that, and it's really a shame because we can be the most diverse people in this country, one of the most diverse groups anyway.
Do you find you have common interests, or do you have shared interests with any of the general populace?
Well, we like the same things they like. We like to watch tennis on television.
You go to baseball games?
Baseball games we go to.
What's your favorite team?
My favorite team is the Cincinnati Reds, in fact. And they also, I might add, the oldest team in the baseball leagues.
Are there any baseball players with these funny names?
I believe there are some in the minor leagues. Now, you may think that the reason they haven't advanced is because their name provides a handicap to them. Let me tell you something, Mike.
Or do they change their names?
Some people do change their names. I really can't vouch for that at all. But the name in no way is an indication of the ability of the player or of the, you know, the ability of the average person. People with names like ours have gone on to invent incredible things.
Really?
Really. The plaster wall, for instance, was invented by a sand... And that was, I believe, in 1857. No, I have to check on that, though.
We can look that up in our almanac.
Okay, you can do that, then. We have contributed to this society just as much as any other group, and I think in this time when everyone's demanding their rights, it's just about time for us to do the same thing, in a peaceful way, of course, but, I mean, of all the groups, I think we've been put upon the most. I want to say thank you for giving me this opportunity to voice this. No one else does. I've tried to get interviews with Eyewitness News and all sorts of things, the cable news network wouldn't even let me on. You know the kind of weirdos they have.
Yeah.
Tom Snyder. Tom Snyder laughed at me for 3 minutes on the phone. I lost my dime. It was unbelievable. But I have to say, I'm glad that there is a radio station.
Before you go, I have one last question. Yeah, you consider yourself a minority in American society. About how many of these you are there?
Well, it's hard to say, really, because if you go around and ask people names like that, they'll usually, as we mentioned before, will come up with a phony name only because they don't like to start having people laugh at you.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of tragic. People are hiding their true identities.
It's somewhat of a silent majority.
A very silent majority. They don't say a word lots of times. They just become total recluses. And I'm trying to bring them out. And hopefully...
You can unite.
We can unite. We can put people in the Senate.
Great.
There's a very strong candidate right now. His name is Walter... And
Walter...
Well, that's close enough. That's another problem. People have got to start learning to pronounce our names correctly. I can give you some pointers on that after.
Okay.
But he is he's a Republican. He's a strong contender, and I think by the year, 1992, he will be a strong candidate, and by that time, certainly people will have heard of us.
Great. Okay, well, thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr.
Thank you, Mike, and...
Oh,
And that will give you an idea of what you're in for if you keep listening to this radio program. All kinds of strange and bizarre sounds will head in your direction. Again, the name of this program is The Fifth Corner. I'm Emmanuel Goldstein, not Citizen Kafka. Citizen Kafka has moved to Tuesday mornings, effective last Tuesday. So if you didn't know that, you've already missed one of his programs, so I suggest you rearrange your sleeping patterns so that you can catch the new morning program. That's from 6 to 9:30 on Tuesdays. And I'll be here Thursday nights for an indefinite period, is what I'm told. So that's the longest I've had a show here to this date. Anyway, usually it's just, 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. But an indefinite period, there's promise in that. You'll be hearing all kinds of mixtures of the kind of programs I've done in the past. If you've listened to Off the Hook, which is the program about telephones and computer hackers and that kind of thing, there'll be a little bit of that in this show. There'll be a little bit of News of the World, which is the program that brings you all kinds of news reports and documentaries and things from other countries. In fact, we'll have something from Radio Moscow in just a few minutes. And, of course, we also do phone-ins, too, so we'll be taking calls during this program at various points. I can't say exactly when we're going to be doing it because, it's just, as I said before, it's such a short period of time. An hour and 15 minutes just shoots by like a comet or something. And since I like playing different kinds of music, too, it's really got to sort of cram it in there. But speaking of computers and things like that, I've been working with a new one recently. I won't say the brand name, but it's one of these ones that can do all kinds of neat desktop publishing applications, which is the reason I got it for the magazine I put out for computer hackers. But it can also, and this is its curse, I think, in addition to doing the desktop publishing, it can also do amazing video games, like the Space Invader kind of thing, where you shoot these little aliens that are coming at you, and just have a whole lot of fun. And I've been sort of falling into that trap night after night, I've been getting better and better at it, too, so it lasts for longer periods of time every night, and I don't know where it's going to end up. Either I'm going to be in some beach, and you can find quite a few of them in the streets of New York, but nowhere did I see so many of them. Nowhere did I see no choice where you had to use one of these customer-owned payphones. And while walking through the streets in Miami, I sort of made up a rule, something that I would stick to from here on in, and that's this: you pick up a payphone,
and it does not allow you access to any other long-distance companies except the one that it has chosen for you, then that is what I call a Ceaușescu payphone. What do I mean by that? I mean a phone that allows you no choice. A phone that cuts you off from the rest of the world and only allows you one view, one way in, or one way out, or whatever. And there's a very easy way to test this, folks, and you might want to get a pen and paper ready for this, because this is something I would like people to do. I'd like people, throughout the course of their lives, throughout their everyday routines, when you see a payphone, and some of these payphones look amazingly like the real ones, but they're not. You know, they look just the same, but they're not. And that tells you something, too, about the ethics of the people behind the thing, if they're trying to make you think it's something that it's not. Every one of these payphones should allow you to make a choice, to pay for the call in whatever way you want to pay for it. And if they don't allow you to make that choice, then obviously they're trying to rip you off, because they're not giving you the option to bill the call the way you want to bill your call. Even if they're not ripping you off, not giving you a choice is, well, it's downright un-American, I think. There, I said it. Okay, everyone got their pen and paper ready. What you do is you go up to a payphone, any payphone, and you dial the following digits. And I'll give you three sets of digits, actually. That way you can, any one of these three, you can dial. 102-880. I'll repeat that, 102-880. What that is doing is giving you the carrier access code for AT&T, which is 10288, and then the zero is what connects you to an operator. Now, if you dial that from any payphone, and it goes through, and you hear that cheerful operator saying AT&T, you've just completed an equal access call to AT&T. Now, so I don't get accused of showing preference to AT&T, I'll give you two other ones. 102220 will connect you to the MCI operator. 103330 will connect you to the Sprint operator. Oh, I'll give you another one. 104440 will connect you to the AllNet operator. And there's others, too. You just have to look for them. So, if that works, fine and dandy. You've got a great phone. You can route the call any way you want and pay for it, you know, however, you have the choice. You have the freedom to do something like that. And the power of technology is in the consumer's hands. It's a wonderful concept, sort of the backbone to democracy, you might say. If, however, you get one of those synthesized voices saying, this is an invalid number, or you have no right to make this call, or how dare you even try to do this, or, you know, deposit $50 to make this call or anything like that. This is what I want you folks to do. I want you to leave that phone off the hook. No pun intended. Leave the phone off the hook and walk away. And tell everybody about that phone. Say, that phone is a bad phone. And don't make any calls to that phone, and don't let any of your friends make calls to that phone, because it's a ripoff. All over Miami Beach last week, reports came in of payphones off the hook. One man was responsible. And I felt good about it, too, you know. But you'll find it in places where people don't know any better. You know, where people are expected to just sort of shell out money and not think about what they're paying for. But this very simple premise, you know, if those numbers work, then they're not ripping you off. If those numbers don't work, then they are ripping you off. And if you have further questions about that, feel free to write into WBAI. And while I can't promise that I'll respond very quickly, I'll try, you know. The address, WBAI, 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. And also, we're also having a computer hacker meeting tomorrow, so if folks want to come to that and meet some of the people that understand all this stuff, it might be fun, it might not be fun, I don't know.
But we have meetings every first Friday of the month at the City Court building in the lobby where all the strange people hang out, and the hours are from about 5 o'clock to about 8 o'clock. That's going to happen tomorrow. The 2600 computer hacker people. But that's another side to this whole thing. There's all kinds of different things we'll be tackling throughout this radio program. We're going to get into the Radio Moscow bit in just a minute, but well, should we get into that now? I'd like to talk about Panama a little bit, because that's also been, you know, all these things have been happening so fast. I mean, Panama and Romania at the same time is more than most people could handle. But Panama, I tell you, it's incredible how the media has forgotten, and how most people have forgotten, that, you know, a very basic thing has been violated here. Yeah, okay, we've got Noriega in Miami. Too bad I wasn't down there for that. That would have been fun. But, and I must admit, I'll say this openly, I never expected Noriega to make it to this country alive. I never expected him to actually make it to Miami. That's a complete surprise to me, and just further proof that we're moving in uncharted territory here. But think of what we've done. I mean, yes, we, us, our country, that's what it's supposed to be, right? We've invaded another country again. And I was listening to African Kaleidoscope before, and I heard the amazing fact that the United States invaded other countries 133 times before the Soviet Union even existed. And I don't even know what the number is now. But the fact that we just keep marching in to impose our will, you know, it's a frightening kind of thing to even imagine. Yet we keep doing it. Grenada and Vietnam and just Haiti. Did we do Haiti? Or Dominican Republic? All these countries. I mean, we could do any country in Central America virtually, and most American people, most of the media would simply shrug it off and say, it's justified. I just don't understand how one drug baron, alleged drug baron, is enough cause to bring in 26,000 troops, you know? It's just incredible. And you have to extend that logic and say, okay, well, let's say that Ortega is a criminal. Okay, let's just assume that for some reason. And I'm sure that Bush would be very happy to plead that case to us. What's the difference? Why can't we invade Nicaragua then? Why can't we invade any country we want south of our border? And then once you answer that question and say, you know, okay, we can invade any country south of our border, what do you have then, you know? What kind of a country do you have? That's what bothers me. I've been walking around the last couple of weeks saying to myself, you know, if this kind of action was done by another country, I'd be looking for ways to boycott that country and just not have anything to do with them. I mean, I felt that way when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan and after Tiananmen Square and with the South Africans. But the question I have is, how do you boycott your own country? I don't know. It's a very troubling thing for me. I just wish, though, that there was a bit more even-handed coverage of this whole thing, because the way it's been portrayed from the beginning, like on cable news network and throughout all the newspapers, I'll say one exception: Newsday seems to have come out pretty much pretty consistently against this invasion. They're the only paper I know that's printed editorials saying that, you know, perhaps we're violating some very fundamental rules here. But the majority are simply going, you know, gung-ho into this. not questioning enough. You know, you have to ask questions. Yeah, a lot of people won't like you when you ask questions. A lot of people will think that you're a subversive or communist. Explain to me, how can you be a communist when the guy that we're ousting is a rightist dictator? Why would a communist, of all things, support a rightist dictator? It's, you know, when people call you names like that, it's because they can't think of any argument. I'd much rather be met with an argument than some kind of blanket name that's thrown at me. But all the networks and cable news network too are guilty of this, of just not reporting the story in a balanced way. You know, I saw this this graphic the following day, the day after we invaded, and the graphic was U.S. hostages in Panama. Of course there's U.S. hostages in Panama. We invaded the country. Certain people are going to react to that. Shouldn't that be the headline? U.S. invades tiny country? Not U.S. hostages in tiny country that the U.S. invaded. It's all so ludicrous and crazy. And then another thing, too, with all this Romanian thing going on at the same time, I guess, you know, their imaginations were roaming a bit wild. At one point, Bush said, you know, it's okay, Soviets over there. If you want to go into Romania, go right ahead. You know, we won't be upset. Go right ahead and invade them, you know. We'll invade our countries over here. You can invade your countries over there. Everybody will be happy. Well, cable news network somehow extended that a bit and said, well, would we be willing to help out the Romanian resistance ourselves? They sort of took that to mean that we would be willing to send in our own troops into Romania. And then they went into this big poll that they did with American people saying, well, 40% of the American people support sending troops into Romania. And all of a sudden, it becomes an issue. We're sending troops into Romania? What? What's going on here? It's unbelievable. So I was very discouraged with the way mainstream media covered this, and hopefully there'll be some kind of backlash, but I haven't seen it yet. I mean, the only place I've seen it is here in Pacifica, WBAI. NPR they've done an abysmal job as far as I'm concerned. Abysmal. I mean, I don't even want to get into this. No questioning, no real issues brought up, just acceptance of something. And again, it comes down to a basic fundamental thing. We invaded another country. We took someone out of that country to face trial here. Why? I don't understand that. Did he just sell drugs to our country? Could any country have the right to go in and take him and try him? Could somebody say that President Bush is a criminal and take him away? I mean, what international laws are we following? Not many, I don't think. But the real culprits are, as I said, the media, because that's the only way to get the word out to people. And the only way to figure out what words you're going to print and what words you're going to send over TV and radio is to ask a lot of questions. They just have not been asking a lot of questions. And most people just go around saying they wouldn't print it if it wasn't true. Right?
never moves beyond these walls. She'll know the facts when Sunday comes along. If you wanna know, find a mad punk sucker. If you wanna know how to play guitar. If you wanna know about any other suckers, you can read it in the Sunday papers.
Well, that's Joe Jackson off his first album, Sunday Papers. Really good song. I wish we could play the rest of it, but as I said before, we just don't have enough time. We're running out of time. And I want to play the New Year's greetings from Radio Moscow that I just got in the mail only 2 days ago. And in future weeks, we'll be playing Moscow Mailbag, which is a lot of fun. In fact, you folks can send your questions to Moscow Mailbag. Radio Moscow, Moscow, the Soviet Union. That's the whole address. I'm not kidding. And say that you heard it here on WBAI, and then we'll get even more programs and more tapes and things like that. And you'll hear your question on our airwaves. And if you have a shortwave radio, you'll hear it on Radio Moscow's airwaves as well. Anyway, we're going to listen to the New Year greetings from Radio Moscow. And that's going to take us pretty much to the end of our show. So let's get right to it.
From the studios of Radio Moscow, this is a special program to all our listeners in North America. With me at the microphone is
Carl Yegorov.
And I'm Nikolai Kornikov. And from our entire staff, the North American service of Radio Moscow, we wish you all the best season's greetings.
And we want you to have a very happy and peaceful 1990 to all of you.
And speaking of a very peaceful 1990, why don't, Carl, how about putting it into music?
Try to get the people into the mood? Well,
yeah,
let's try, it. Nick.
Okay.
Okay, we're not professional singers.
Yeah, no, don't say that. Don't say
no,
that.
No, we ain't. Olga.
Our music editor, is here at the piano. She's going to help us. Okay?
Olga, can we start the first song?
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright, round yon virgin mother and child, holy infant so tender and sleep in heavenly peace, sleep in heavenly peace.
Well, we got through that all right.
Well, that's what we usually start out our parties with when we get together. We also celebrate Christmas. And we have a lot of people here at Radio Moscow who have been abroad, lived abroad for a long time.
That's including us, too.
That's right. You come from New York?
Yes, I come from New York. That was a long, long time ago, back in 1943.
And how was it? How'd you get here, Nick?
Well,
that was
that's
during
a long,
the war.
Yeah, that was during
make
the
it
war.
Short.
Well, to put it in two words, my mother and father were Russians. They were patriots. When the war started, they wanted me to help out in the Red Army, so they sent me over here. Pulled some strings, and I got here, and I fought with the Red Army right up to the end of the war.
And you were in the cavalry?
That's right, that's right.
And you have one of the Orders of Glory, which is a very high distinction. No, I know that.
Okay, thanks. By the way, I got into the cavalry because I was with horses all my life. My father, with two other Russians, they had a very good riding school in New York. It was called the Boots and Saddle School of Riding on East 91st Street in New York.
And how old were you then? You took part in that too?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was riding ever since I was a little kid. I mean, I began walking, riding, and swimming about the same time.
And that's why you got bowled eggs.
And no, you come from Canada. Why don't you tell us how you got here?
Well, like you, Nick, my parents are of Russian origin, and they emigrated to Canada way back in 1927. What was partly what was Poland at that time, now it's the Western Ukraine. I have a brother, and we were born and brought up in Canada, born in Winnipeg.
I'm sorry your brother couldn't be here today. He would have been a nice third voice.
He apologized. He couldn't. He couldn't make it. He also works at the radio.
And his name is George.
And, we, like I said, were born and brought up in Winnipeg. And then after that, we moved to the farm up in the north, Bozeman River in Manitoba. And you remember one of the songs that we used to sing way back then?
You know, I never doubted that you'd get around to that old song.
Well, let's give it a crack.
Okay.
Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm he had a cow, E-I-E-I-O. With a moo-moo here and a moo-moo there, here moo, there moo, everywhere moo-moo. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm he had a dog, E-I-E-I-O. With a bow-wow here and a bow-wow there, and a here bow there bow, everywhere bow-wow. Moo-moo here, a moo-moo there, here moo, there moo, everywhere moo-moo. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. And on this farm he had a chick, E-I-E-I-O. With a chick chick here and a chick chick there, and a here chick there chick everywhere chick chick. A bow wow here and a bow wow there, here bow there bow, everywhere bow wow. Moo moo here, a moo moo there, here moo there moo, everywhere moo moo. Old MacDonald had a farm, E-I-E-I-O. Good evening, friends.
All right. Down the whole line of animals that he had.
Yeah, thank God we didn't go through that whole line of animals. We'd be here till late at night, especially on your farm. You had a lot of animals.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we had horses, two horses. My father really liked them. One was called Baldy, the other one was Ned. And we had dogs and all the domestic animals,
well,
and poultry.
Carl, let's get back to the season that we're talking about. You know, we used to have some, I'm talking to the audience now, we used to have some great Christmas parties at Carl's place here in Moscow.
Yes, at the old place.
I remember the first party we had, that was somewhere back in 1967 or 66, somewhere around there.
Quite some time ago.
And about 2 o'clock in the morning, I think, we were all...
We weren't feeling any pain.
We weren't feeling any pain, and we come out, and you lived right in the center of town.
Yeah, right.
Right opposite the Central Committee and the KGB headquarters.
In between them,
right in between them. And we came out to take a walk. It was very cold.
About minus 25, minus 30
centigrade, somewhere around there. It was sort of a foggy
night. Well, we needed
night.
A breather anyway.
And how we did. And there's a big monument.
It still stands there.
And you and I, Carl, stood up on that monument on the pedestal,
and
we sang Holy Night, Silent Night.
Silent Night, yeah.
And from way down below somewhere, a squad car started crawling up gradually.
I remember that.
Went around us, took a look at us.
Took a look at us.
And went away.
And we didn't do anything.
We didn't, know. We just
had a great time.
We had a terrific song. So let's try that once again, okay? It always takes me way, way back to my childhood. I remember.
Well, we do too.
All these Christmas songs, Jingle Bells, and then Deck the Halls with Boughs of Holly, and all of
well,
them.
Well, everything, the whole list of Christmas.
No, we had a terrific time. At those Christmas parties, yours, you had a nice fireplace burning there.
I remember. You remember we had a fireplace. We wouldn't turn on the electric lights. Everything was just the candles and mistletoe. I remember we used to stand there and wait till the girls come in, and then they wouldn't know that the mistletoe.
No, nobody around here knew anything about mistletoe.
Yeah, but we taught them.
We taught them. Yeah, whether we had some or whether we didn't have any.
Well, we've been here at the radio. Nick, you've been here.
I've been here at the radio since 1951, 38 years or something.
Well, I've been here a little bit less. I've been here since 59.
You haven't been back to Canada yet, no?
No, I haven't. But you have been to the States.
Yes, I went back and
could
I visited
New York. Could you recall in a couple of words?
Sure. I was back there last year in August. And regretfully, I got there at the height of a fantastic heat wave. You just couldn't walk around New York.
And what'd you do to get out of the
heat wave? Well, mostly sat eating hamburgers in McDonald's.
Is that right?
Yeah. No, but it was very hot, very hot. I mean, all the trains and everything, they're air conditioned.
Did you notice any changes in those years that you haven't been there?
To say that I noticed changes is putting it mildly. Because
recognize New York?
Oh, no, New York. New York is New York. I love it. It's a vibrant, living city. But, of course, the colors, the smells, the sounds, a lot was different. At first, I was a bit lost. Then I got onto it, and all right, I got around. I took the A train and everything else.
Is that?
Yeah. By the way, Carl, you've been doing hockey announcing here during the Izvestia tournament, haven't you?
Yes, I'm doing that right now at the time of this recording. We are now in the midst of the 23rd International Ice Hockey Tournament for the Izvestia Prize.
Okay, you asked for it. Who do you think is going to win?
There's still a lot of games to be played, I'll tell you quite honestly, the way the Soviets have 4 points, Canada has 3, Czechoslovakia has 3, but all the big games between them are coming. I'll stick my neck out.
Go ahead.
Team Canada number 1, USSR number 2, Czechoslovakia 3. But what I want to say is that the organizer of this tournament, Boris Fedosov, unexpected...
He's Izvestia sports...
Sports commentator. Okay. He's the one that organized the Snegovik, the whole tournament 23 years ago, and he passed away... at the end of October, and now a very good friend of ours in Winnipeg, Manitoba,
that's your hometown.
My hometown, Mr. George Smith, has made a trophy, a Boris Fedosov trophy, and his son is bringing it up to Moscow.
What is it, about a foot high?
It's 13 inches high. Made of stainless steel and nickel-plated on an oak base.
It's a figure of a snowman.
Yes, Snegovik, or the snowman. And it's going to go to the team, to the winning team. Every year. They keep it for a year, and then they bring it back for the next tournament. I think that this is a good gesture to honor the memory of Boris Fedosov.
You're being modest, Carl. That was your idea. And let's say a big thanks to George Smith and Winnipeg.
That's what I want to say, Nick. Mr. George Smith, if you're listening to this program, or anyone who is listening to this program and knows Mr. George Smith in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, a great big thank you from all ice hockey fans in the USSR for this very wonderful gesture, because we could feel that it's coming straight from the bottom of your heart, and this is what it's all about, the season's greetings. And
fine, Carl, how about, as long as it's season's greetings, let's go let's end the program, end this little talk of recollections with Auld Lang Syne.
Well, let's try it.
Once again,
The very warmest season greetings from
to all our listeners
to everybody in
North
America,
America,
Canada, and the United States.
From Carl Yegorov
and myself, Nikolai Kornikov. Thank you, Olga, for helping us at the piano.
Olga Fyodorova, our music editor. Thank you very much, love.
And that'll give you a taste of some of the things we have in store for us here on the Fifth Corner. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. I'll see you next week. And who knows what we'll be playing then. All kinds of neat, fun things. Stay tuned for Bob Fass. Good night.
That program was compiled at the studios of Radio Moscow.
This is WBAI in New York City. Piles of programs like that, I guess, exist at the studios of Radio Moscow. There are certainly piles of radio programs in the halls here at WBAI that are even more achingly nostalgic, I'm sure. There are boxes and boxes and boxes and yet more boxes full of tapes of old archive programs that have been retrieved from storage so that this marathon can parade the glorious history of this bastion of free expression between your ears. This is Bob Fass. I think this is now called either primary sources or secondary sources or tertiary or trion, I don't know what it's called, actually, but I'm here, and you're there, and maybe we'll play some records, and maybe we'll talk.